Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 223 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Indeed, folks. Boom, indeed. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Let's see. Drew Groh of the band Modern Kin from Portland, Oregon will be joining us here in the backyard shortly. This is a great conversation, man. Amazingly dark and sincere and wonderful journey that Mr. Groh has been on. Finding himself as an artist and evolving as an artist. And it's a really, really good conversation. I had a great time talking with him. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation and the music as well. We're going to be featuring music from the band Modern Kin throughout the episode, as we always do. Not always featuring Modern Kin. You guys know what I'm saying, right? You've been listening to this show for a while. You get it. Featuring Modern Kin on the show. You can find out more about them at modern-kin.com. They're going to be going into the studio, making a new album here pretty soon this winter, hunkering down, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well, right? Okay. Welcome. I hope you guys have a great week. Thanksgiving is upon us, and we're all going to eat ourselves senseless. I think I have a food addiction, and I can't stop eating. I can't stop smoking. And it's bad, man. I'm going to die soon, I think. If I keep on going on this course that I'm going on right now, if I stay on these rails, folks, the train is going to crash at some point. And I think it's crashing now, man. I ate so much food last night on Saturday night. It was ridiculous. I just could not stop myself from eating candy and about 20 Totino's pizza rolls. Yeah, that's right. Totino's pizza rolls. Oh, my God. And I just feel like crap. I just feel like shit, like total shit today. It's awful. It's super, super awful. Guys, it's bad. Yeah. Thanksgiving is coming up and I'm going to eat more. I'm just going to fill my face with more food. I'm going to feel totally awful, for the rest of the day. That's what this holiday is about, right? You eat yourself silly, you feel terrible. And then you go to sleep, you slip into a food coma, right? And you're just uncomfortable for like, at least 12 hours. 12 hours of your life on Thanksgiving. That's what the holiday is about, just being uncomfortable in your own skin. Yeah, meat sweats. That's another thing that this holiday is about. It's just about meat sweats. It's going to be too hot, and I'm just going to start sweating in my sweatshirt, which is probably what I will wear to my in-laws' house. That's it. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys are thankful for something. Yeah, that's right. But the holidays are coming, folks. The holidays are coming, and we've got something special planned that I will be hosting, emceeing at the Rendezvous here in Seattle. A very Belltown Christmas, number one. Do206.com is putting on a few holiday themed shows. This one coming up on Thursday, December 4th, 8 p.m., $5 with RSVP. Go to do206.com and check it out. $8 without RSVP. But there's going to be a bunch of great artists at this show, guys. Aaron Jones, Whitney Lyman, Susie Sun. Let's see, Au Pairs, who have been on this show. The band Boat. Yeah, they'll all be there at the Rendezvous, hosted by yours truly, at Thursday, December 4th, 8 p.m. at the Rendezvous here in Seattle in the Belltown neighborhood. It's going to be a lot of fun, guys, and it's a smaller venue. So get your tickets now. RSVP right now at do206.com and get yourself on the list because it's a small place and it's going to fill up super fast. Super fast. And then we can all drink and be merry and get ready for hanging out with more family during the Christmas holiday. How's that sound, right? Or whatever you celebrate, not just Christmas. The holiday holiday. That's what I'm talking about. The holiday holiday. Is that PC enough for everybody? I hope so. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Remember also, you can find out more about the Air Raid podcast by going to our website at air-raid.net, clicking on the archives tab, and you've got all 223 episodes there for your listening pleasure, all for free. We only have the latest 20 up on iTunes, as many of you know, and that's not going to change anytime soon. You got to go to the website. Maybe subscribe to the RSS feed or something and use it on your podcatcher. You could probably get more episodes like that. But if you want to go visit the website, that'd be great. You know, we get the web hits and we get to show that to sponsors and stuff like that. So that helps, right? Yeah. And you can listen to all 223 episodes, like I said, with, people like John Roderick or David Bazan from Pedro the Lion, man. Yeah, that was a good one, right? John and David were on the same episodes. We had a great conversation. How about Jason Manzoukas June Diane Raphael and Paul Scheer all on one episode of the How Did This Get Made podcast and, of course, the awesome show The League. That was a great episode, too. How about Steve Ranassisi from The League? He was on the show as well. Or Brian Posehn, or Mike Birbiglia, or the band Surfer Blood, or, Macklemore, or the list goes on and on, folks. That's what I'm trying to get at here. Go to air-raid.net and click on the Archives tab, and you can find out all about us there. Or you can just click on the About tab and find out how the show got started and stuff like that. You know, that's cool too, I guess. Yeah. Okay. I think I've ran that sufficiently into the ground. Okay. Yeah. Let's get started with the episode. We're featuring songs from the album Modern Kin, the self-titled album from Modern Kin. And this song is called Abandon. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Drew Groh of the band Modern Kin. Okay. Stay with us, everybody. I know you're going to enjoy this. Oh, man, it's dark. It's dark. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Fall after a day. Man calls me a coward, boy. We'll be right back.
We haven't been to Seattle for a while, and we have a lot of friends here, so we ended up closing the place down.
Yeah, it was down at Columbia City Theater, right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great place, too. Have you ever played there?
We have.
Yeah?
We have. Yeah, in the previous incarnation of the band, we played there a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we have some... The venue are friends of ours, and the manager, the club manager, and then just a bunch of friends showed up, so it was...
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
it was
great, man.
It was great.
That's good. Yeah, and you guys are... right now, you're just playing this, like, small... kind of Oregon, Washington little tour, mini tour, right?
Yeah.
Would you even call it that? Like, I've heard other people say that's not a tour, three shows.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like we just came back from doing a month around the country. So
oh, you did?
I feel like I have, I did that. That's like a tour. This is definitely like a mini
right,
tour.
Right.
But it's, you know, we're learning about how kind of like how things are now out there and how the shows work and how to travel. And it used to be you could tour. I think you could just tour and like, you know, make a living. And I think some, you know, at a certain level you can. And we've just been learning about like putting together some regional runs like this. Just,
okay.
You know, like
okay.
Busted and like,
yeah.
You know, go out east from where we live and go out through Boise and Salt Lake, Denver. Like we can kind of go out that way and then we can kind of go down south to Sacramento and San Francisco and do Northern California, all that stuff like in a quick stretch where it's not a huge expense, but we can, you know, plan ahead and have good shows.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So has it changed that much since you guys were Drew Groh and the Pastor's Wives?
I feel like things are changing really fast in music. I mean, I'm not breaking any news by saying that.
Sure.
But,
sure.
But the thing that's great is that people still love live music. And I think music, people love music and the excitement of live shows can be so infectious and powerful. And, but at the same time, it's like, there's, you know, just even in music, there's a, you know, billion bands and lots of good ones. It's very competitive. And then, you know, and then also you're competing against, you know, like, we all feel, you know, there's, what is it? Like how many different like apps and things can we keep up with and trying to keep up with family and work and all that stuff. So
yeah,
it's definitely like, I mean, I don't think I'm the only one feeling like it's, you know, keeping it on the rails. Just keeping our lives on the rails is challenging.
Oh, sure.
You know, in general, and then trying to make room for things, lifestyle things that feed us, like live shows and music and that kind of thing is like, it's challenging. So we're just adapting and, you know, it's a new world.
Yeah. Are you doing it? I mean, is it working so far?
Yeah. I mean, it's working because I love music and because I've been playing.
You make
music
it happen.
My life.
Right.
Yeah. And, in a lot of ways, in most ways, I'm more successful. We're more successful than anything I've done previously. So I feel really good about that part.
Well, that's fantastic.
But we, you know, we kind of labor in music. We labor under this concept, you know, that it's sort of like we grew up with, you know, the rock and roll concept. And it's just like, you know, it's like everyone is sort of comparing themselves with the Beatles or with, you know, Rolling Stones or with Bob Dylan or whatever. And it's like, you know, you break young and you're the next big thing and like whatever. And that's how music works. But
it doesn't work like that anymore.
Well,
that doesn't happen.
I think that was an anomaly in the history of the world, you know, for art.
Sure.
You know, it's, there are still certainly people who are bigger and huger than ever. And, you know, and that depends as much as it ever did on things like marketing and all those kinds of things and where the money goes and all that sort of stuff. But
yeah,
you know, for normal people, just, you know, it's like we're living on this rock in the middle of space, you know, and it's like, it's incredible to be sentient, like thinking people like on this rock and that where we can't even find any other life so far out there.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, I feel it's like, it's amazing to be alive and it's amazing to have this opportunity. And like, it's strange to, in the grand scheme of things, think about how to spend this life and how to use what, you know, like whatever, that's this thing that's in my body to play music and, So that's like a mind bender for me that kind of is always in conflict with this idea that I'm like, you know, like it should break in a certain way. It should look a certain way. It should look a certain way. And,
You have expectations though about your career in music? Do you have certain expectations? Let's say, you know, thinking ahead, like 5 years, this is where I should be.
I think I've already kind of gone through that sort of phase. And it's like, I've been parts of things that were quite successful, and, you know, and I'm building, and I feel like I'm learning about writing and learning about performing, and I'm enjoying it as much or more than ever. But it's an interesting thing. It's like, you know, the people, I have a good friend who's a poet, mm-hmm. and there are sort of these kind of rock star slam poets. But I would draw a line between them and like poets who are more, I don't know, from a literary sensibility.
Sure.
And there's not a way to like make a living at it. And their art for their whole life is going to be based on what brings them pleasure and like speaks to them. Does their work speak to them and others? So like I've come home to that, kind of recently. And even though I feel like things are now, I'm on better footing now in some ways than I've ever been musically.
Yeah, yeah.
I've come home to this idea that like, I need to make music for myself, and I need to make music that like talks to me and that feeds me, and then I can bring it to people and be like,
sure,
can we do this together?
And if a byproduct is that other people like it, then so be it. Right.
Right. Well, and certainly you hope that the thing that, well, at least I've found that the thing that I, that resonates with me, the songs that when I'm just like, I'm in the middle of writing a song and I had the experience of writing a song where it was like, I don't know, it's kind of dramatic, but like I was writing the song that was about, that was, you know, it was, about a particular time in my life. And I was kind of, I'm just like strumming and writing and strumming and writing. And then sort of before I got to the, where I hadn't even played it yet, but I kind of, in my head, I knew where it was going to go. And I just started like just breaking down. Yeah. I was just like, oh my God. And it was like, that song like resonated with me most strongly. And when I brought it out, what do you know? It's like, this is something that was also really universal.
Sure.
That hits everybody, you know? And so I feel like the more the better. It was a song on the last record, called Friendly Fire.
Okay.
And, so, but there's lots of experiences like that in smaller ways that are less dramatic or melodramatic. I think it's true.
Yeah.
The more I dig in for what I'm about and what resonates with me, the better it is in the world. So it's funny to talk about this, 'cause I've really been thinking about this the last 24 uh-huh. hours. So I feel like maybe I just threw this interview into the deep end.
No, not at all, man. This is what I like.
Anyway,
this is what I like. Starting off with a shotgun blast.
There you go.
To the ear holes. Thank you so much for joining me in the Drew Grow in the backyard here of the band Modern Kin from Portland, Oregon. Welcome, sir.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about your kind of musical history, because this is kind of what this show is about. We learn about new people, learn about the stuff that they're doing. So where did music start in your life, Drew?
I grew up in a musical family.
Yeah.
You know,
always something going on, people playing instruments and, mm-hmm. and records and everything.
Yeah. My mom was a vocal major at university and, uh-huh. And studied, and her parents both sang in the chorus of the opera. And,
oh, wow.
And
so it's like the real deal. They were true opera singers.
Yeah. They're in the chorus of the opera.
Wow.
And, my mom then went on to become a folk singer in coffee shops. And then by the time I came along, my parents had both become evangelical Christians. So then I grew up in the church. And so,
okay.
But there was a lot of like singing in the car and singing at home. And my mom taught me folk songs on the guitar when I was really quite young.
Oh, that's fantastic. Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in upstate New York.
Okay.
And then we moved out. My dad was an engineer and he got a job at Boeing. So we actually moved to Everett.
Oh, really?
Washington, which is actually where we're playing tonight.
Yeah.
And it's my first time. It's my first time like ever playing music anywhere near my hometown. So I'm actually really excited.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. So how long were you guys here in Washington then?
So I lived in Washington, came up and went to University of Washington.
Oh, cool.
And then moved to Portland for a band and really enjoyed Portland a lot and stayed there.
So evangelical Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still practicing?
No.
No? Have you left the faith?
How can I say this? I've recently tried to articulate this with my family because they're very much still Christians and involved in the church.
Yeah.
And I would say there are two, I guess I say, I have before, there are two great works in my life, and one of them is my music, and the other one is processing through understanding and coming to terms for me with what I perceive as being the untruths that I was born into. And
sure,
you know, I have an incredible loving family, and I grew up in it, you know, I couldn't ask for a better childhood, but it's an atom bomb when for me, it was an atom bomb when I came into such a stark conflict that it was like, I've grown up with something that brought me so much good and I've depended on so much. And, this is patently false. I can no longer, it's no longer tenable.
When did that happen? When you went to college?
I mean, it probably took me 15 years because I didn't like get mad and feel hurt or something.
You were just asking questions.
Yeah.
Like you were just starting to question
it. It was purely intellectual. It was 100% intellectual. And so, but the thing that made it not intellectual was that, those ideas that I grew up with were so deeply seated that like trying to weed those things out is, you know, like for a kid, what's like pretty terrifying, and you don't just do that overnight.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah. We've had this conversation a lot on this show. Cause I'm always really interested in it. This is something that I always say.
Did you grow up in the
church? I did not. And so it's,
I find the people who didn't grow up in the church are totally interested.
I'm totally interested in it. And you know, I could care less if somebody is, you know, very religious or not, or believes in God or not. You know, whatever. But it just fascinates me endlessly, especially with people who have left it.
Right.
Because there's a struggle there, right? Like and it seems like a scary thing. Like if you're told that you're going to be going to hell for a majority of your life for things that, you know, for somebody like me would seem pretty mundane, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's more subtle than that. Like,
okay.
I wasn't concerned about, I didn't really grow up in the kind of home that was, we were concerned with hell, and I was getting
that. When you it's say evangelical, like, though, like that's what brings.
Yeah. It's like really like, it was a real holy roller, like this scenario. It was pretty wild. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I really learned about rock and roll from those bands. I mean, this is like late, you know, late night, super emotional, sweating music,
like the bands that would
all
play in
summer
church?
Night. Yeah. This is not like bands now with the, you know, like with like smoke machines and stuff. This is like, this was a church that was like almost completely filled with, Swedish and Norwegian immigrants.
Yeah.
That had found this little area, and they were sort of like, they were doing Southern gospel. So it was like pedal steel, Northern European, bizarre, like mix, like Faith Healer, crazy shit. And it was,
speaking in tongues.
Oh yeah.
That kind of stuff?
The whole thing. Yeah, yeah. Everything. Rolling the aisles of the whole thing.
Wow.
But not like a production. It was like, you know, it was Southern. It was, it was intense.
Like and, tent revival kind of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You know, and I you know, with Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and, you know, whatever, and all, and, you know, and all of the great musicians, Little Richard and of the, you know, like Aretha Franklin of the African American like blues and early rock and roll and all that. It's like they were all coming out of the church, and they were all learning from that just crazy crazy passion and power and all that stuff.
That makes a lot of sense. I've never really thought about it that way, but that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. Like, from gathering, like, even some of their moves, like, you know, Lionel Richie, or not Lionel Richie, but Little Richard. That's a pretty big mix up. But James Brown or something, like, just the way that they move and, like, their movements on stage, and they're like, sweating profusely and getting their foreheads dabbed off or something like that, mm-hmm. and throwing the cape off and going crazy.
It's really like it is when music is just notes. I feel like it can be very sterile, and that can be kind of amazing too in a certain way.
Well, sure, yeah.
But when it touches on things that already have sort of like meaning or power in our life, then it starts getting this like this emotional sort of overtone on it. And so like for a lot of people, even still, but especially at that time, like there's a lot of people who are coming up in the church, and a lot of people were, that was the norm in America,
and
it still is in some ways. But so by like kind of embodying that and bringing that with them and bringing that to, I mean, that's what made soul music, it was all of that kind of like passion and intensity and the heart wrenchingness of blues, but it was spiritual, even though it wasn't, it's like you listening to Sam Cooke or Otis Redding or whatever. It's like, it's changed into being profoundly human and in a way that could get broader than something where we have to agree that, that a particular religious set of beliefs is true.
Sure.
But it's bouncing off those heartstrings,
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so that I learned a lot from those people and, three piece suits and, it was an intense childhood for sure in that way.
Yeah.
And definitely camp meetings and summer, all night, music and stuff like that was crazy.
Yeah. Do you have harsh feelings towards that stuff now that you look back on it?
Nobody likes being lied to. Like, it's not good. So on some level, but it's like at the same time, everybody's doing their best, man. They're just doing their best. I really believe in that. I get in discussions all the time. Like, I'm kind of an optimist, and I really believe that people are doing their best. And if it doesn't look like their best, you just don't know their story, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I want to live, and that's what I want.
I like that outlook. I with me comes up a lot when people are talking politics.
Right.
Like, this guy's evil, but my guy isn't, and it's like, no, I have to believe in my heart that somebody like, I don't know, name a Republican, right, that I may not agree with, but he's just trying to do he or she is just trying to do what he or she believes in,
right?
Believes is best for the country. I have to believe that in my heart of hearts.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't seem like
that. I don't
know
about politics. I don't know if my theory goes over to politics. I mean, that's pretty involved. But I mean, you can just draw a line from how I was raised to – what people would probably say is still a naive idea.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was part of growing up too. Was like, just like when you're young, you are naive. And then as you get older,
you follow the leader, right?
Yeah. And then as you get older, you like figure some things out for yourself. But I think I've kept some kind of elements of being trusting and naive that I like them. not because I want to not know things, but I want to believe the best of people.
Yeah.
I
like that.
I don't know.
I like that a lot.
I mean, it really sets you up to get fucked over, but.
It can. Yeah, it can in certain situations and definitely in certain businesses.
Right.
That's for sure. So,
but anyway, a nice light interview.
Right. So you're learning music from like your parents. I mean, did you start with guitar? What instrument did you start with?
Yeah, I started with guitar.
Yeah.
My older brother played guitar.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
he at that age hung the moon, so I wanted to do whatever wanted to do. You know, it was like Chuck Norris and acoustic guitar. It was like these things are cool, you know.
Uzis. Ripped off jean jacket vests.
Chinese throwing stars
and guitar.
Yeah.
Right on.
There you go. But it was funny because I learned music when I was young and I never really thought much about it. It was really second nature to me. And then,
were you writing your own stuff even as like a young kid? Like, were you just making up your own stuff, or were you learning like actual songs? And
yeah, I mean, I think playing songs I knew, but definitely feeling free and comfortable inside music, and like, you know, like when I'm playing, I just play, and you know, like putting chords together and new combinations and all that.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. You know, and then as I got older, I was just like, I'll do something. Music's cool and everything, but I want to do, you know, my dad was an engineer, and I'm like, I love science and math, and I thought I would get into that. And then it was like, once I got to university level, I was like, my brain just doesn't do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and meanwhile, I'm acing my music theory classes, going like, yeah, whatever, who cares? And there's all these people struggling in those classes, but I'm like, oh, that's nothing. Music and, like writing, it's like really easy. I want to do this thing that's really challenging.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I just figured out like why. I'm like, duh, I should.
So you went, you were like taking engineering courses and stuff like that at the U?
Yeah. Well, I just barely got in the door with, with like physics and math. And it was just like,
that is some of the hardest shit. Way. That is some of the hardest shit. I had the hardest time with physics.
I still have nightmares about, like, I had to drop my withdraw from my physics class.
I did too. Yeah.
And I was like, I still have nightmares that I've like missed classes and that now I'm going to have to withdraw. It's like, it was such a stressful time.
Oh my God. This is so funny, Drew, because I had that dream just 2 nights ago and I woke up in a fucking sweat. Like, I mean, I was... Yeah. Drenched. I was terrifying. So nervous because there it was a quantum mechanics class.
Okay.
Right. And so this is like upper level, you know, physics. I had scraped by to get even into this level. And I was just like, I was a nervous wreck the night before this exam. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I took this exam. I know I failed, you know, cause like I left a shit ton of it undone.
Right.
And I go up to the professor and I was like, this is just not working. Like, I am not getting this. Like, I was meeting with the professor like almost every day, like, explain this again to me, you know, and it just was not working. And I felt so terrible. And he gave me, thank God, he gave me a D+.
Wow.
And I think he felt really sorry for me. And then I explained to him, I was like, I have to drop this course because I had two more physics classes that I needed to take for my major, right? Mm-hmm. And I still, like, 2 nights ago, man, had the dream of that exam coming up the next day, and I am so underprepared because I just don't get it, and it was the worst. just the worst feeling.
I think it was that physics course that that made me go like, all right, I'm gonna be a music major. So it was music and history, and it was like, you know, it's like the storytelling and like, how does it all work and like philosophy courses. And
sure.
All that stuff.
Sure. That's great, man. So did you switched majors right there? What year in college were you?
I was about the right time. You know, it was like sophomore year or something.
Sophomore. Okay. So you didn't like, you didn't do what I did and wait till my senior year to drop that course and go like, okay, well, what the hell do I do now?
Now what? I think I'll end up doing a radio show.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, Drew, thank you. Let's see. I almost like tried to end the show right there, but we have a whole next half that still needs to come. We're going to go with our second musical break off of the self-titled album, Modern Kin. This is Big Enough to Cook, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Drew Groh of the band Modern Kin. Stay with us.
With their toes in the water, with their hands on their thighs, with their axe at the root. Well, come on, sucker. Oh,
say she gets serious, you know? You just go with it, right?
I guess so.
I have had a person in here, I'm not going to name names, but I have had a person in here that said, you know, I don't feel comfortable with that going on air.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like I took out almost like a 25-minute chunk of the show.
It was too personal.
It was just, yeah, it got a little personal, you know, and they didn't feel comfortable with it. So, you know, that happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's strange. The music is now, you know, there used to be so few sort of media outlets for musicians.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
We're not very, I mean, as you come up, you know, you're not necessarily very accustomed. And so you feel like, wow, there's someone who's interested in my music. Like they're asking me these questions. And then you're like, how deep to go? And then it kind of like, cause it is, you know, it does go there. I mean,
oh, yeah,
music doesn't
yeah.
come out of nowhere, you know?
Right. Right.
It does go to all those places and it goes to your childhood and all these things. So it's, you know, you kind of got to learn what you want to say and what you don't want to say.
Oh, sure.
And,
sure. Yeah. We've had like, cause we've had a lot of comedians on the show too. And yeah. they're like usually kind of the easiest people to talk to cause right, they're all right. out there already. Right.
right.
Like some
riffing. And...
Yeah, totally. Totally. And a lot of them are used to going on podcasts and having those kind of serious conversations anyway. Okay. So like, you know, the music thing, and you're doing great. I'm having a blast talking with you, but there are some musicians that really, right. really are not capable of right. talking. Like,
well, you know it is, I mean, it's strange. Like music is now more than ever, I think, you know, you know, because the way that people consume their music now, it's like you can't. It's not enough just to be a musician. Now you have you have to wear all these hats, and it's forcing people who have zero talent for like, you know, marketing or like talking to others. You know, like, it's forcing them to have to do it instead of just writing great songs. You know, like, you know, you look back and it's like there's. Tons of introverts in music and and people who that's just not what they do. And if those people, you know, were in today's world, I think they would have a really hard time. We have to, you know, it's like you have to wear so many hats to try to make it in music.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So when we left for the second musical break, we were kind of talking about how you got your start.
Yeah.
When was the first band experience? How old were you?
I was 19.
19?
Yeah, 19.
So you were in college?
Yeah, it was my first year of college.
Uh-huh.
I had some high school friends, and we had a little band, and that was it. We were having a lot of fun and just like practicing in the basement. And
do you ever play a show with that band?
Yeah.
Take me back, Drew. Tell me about that first show. Getting up in front of people and playing live.
Yeah, I don't know if I remember the first one.
Obviously, it wasn't as scarring an experience as it was for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, because I had grown up in a musical family and all that stuff, and then I was involved in music in high school and then in college and stuff, I think...
Stage fright wasn't really a thing.
It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing. It was like, I mean, I kind of said it before, but like I just sort of took to music...
Sure.
Really intuitively, and my problems in music weren't some of the normal ones. Like there are some of these things you were talking about where it's like how to make the other pieces kind of like all fit together.
Right,
the musical
right.
part for me and the performing part for me was something I always loved, and the interaction with the audience was something I always was very cathartic and meaningful to me. And so it, you know, not to say I haven't been nervous obviously for shows and all that stuff, but generally, that wasn't such a big thing. It was just more like I'm just writing really pedantic music, and then I listening. I mean, you can imagine, like, we listen to lots of church music and folk music around my house, and like, you know, my dad's, 45s, like, record collection that we had, you know, like put on a cassette, like all the songs, and it was like, you know, Short Shorts and Flying Purple People Eater and these hilarious songs that he liked when he was young. And going from there and being thrown into, you know, in the 90s Seattle, it was just like man, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything. I was right, so green, right. You know, and here's like really cool music being made that was based on like a lot of years of history and how, you know, and how punk and rock had developed, you know, in Seattle, you know, over the last previous two decades, you know, yeah. And here I am like, okay, I got, you know, like, I got church music and I got like some Elvis songs and I got some Beatles songs in there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I could do music and I just had to learn. I just had to go to school. There was like a period of time in my life where I just had like all the Rolling Stones records and I just pretty much for a year straight, just listened only to the Rolling Stones songs.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, I couldn't believe it. Like I couldn't believe it. Like, growing up in the music I had grown up on, I couldn't believe it. It was just like,
so that
this
was like,
is incredible. This is, I just couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So was that kind of like, your first discovery into that like musical realm? I mean, were you,
well,
it sounds like your dad at least, yeah, and your mom for that matter, like they were introducing, you know, different types of music to you, right, even, you know,
for sure,
along with the Christian rock. So, I mean, you had to have heard, you know, some of those pop elements,
yeah,
that were coming through with the rest of the country, right?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it was a pretty sheltered childhood, so it wasn't really, yeah, it wasn't really till I got to university that,
oh,
I started,
okay,
stretching out more.
Really?
I mean, I'd really gotten into vocal jazz, which is sort of crazy, but, you know, like I was just, you know, going to school on those vocalists and,
yeah,
you know, I would have, yeah, I mean, for me, it's just, you know, it's Ella Fitzgerald. It's just the greats, you know?
Yeah, and, yeah,
and it was safe enough in the context for my family and for my world, because, you know, vocal jazz is very sort of soft in a way, but uh-huh, it was virtuosic singing and incredible,
sure,
compositions and string arrangements and stuff. So it wasn't horrible, but, you know, but then I was in, you know, but then it's a rock and roll world, you know,
yeah,
it's not,
yeah, totally,
it's not a jazz world. So,
were you doing vocal stuff in school as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that go? Cause you have a very unique voice,
yeah,
that does not,
I didn't sing like this then.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I was much quieter.
Uh huh.
And I was in some groups and learned about harmonies and just chord structures and how the notes play against each other, and it was a really good education. I had,
yeah,
I had an incredible choir teacher at Snohomish High School, and then Mr. Castro, who that just kind of blew up my world. That was like,
yeah,
that was the beginning of learning about music that I didn't know about previously.
That's fantastic, yeah, man. Having an instructor in high school like that, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, you graduate with this music degree. When does Drew Grow and the Pastor's Wives come into play here?
Well, I've been through different bands and kind of had been different places around the country and all these things. And, I basically at one point, was just in Portland working on a solo record, just working on my own stuff. Like, uh-huh, the previous band had dissolved.
Band was that?
It was a band called Kareen.
Okay.
It was like just kind of like a rock and roll band, sort of in a poppier sense. What would it be like?
I recognize that name, and
we played around a bit. We had a good run for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
But then when that band ran down, then I just, it was the first time, you know, I got my brother-in-law, you know, gave me a computer with like the early version of Pro Tools on it. And I set it up. I was renting a room in a house in Portland,
yeah,
and I set it up in my room, and I just started tracking and,
yeah,
just started writing. And it was the first time I had recorded that it wasn't like so expensive.
Right.
That I haven't gone to the studio, and it was, you know, I got to raise however much money or get an investor or find a record label or whatever. It was like, I could just do this.
That's a life changing event right there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I got, you know, 20, 25 songs in or something like that. And then, my now bandmate Jeremiah, who plays drums,
uh-huh,
with me, we were just like listening to stuff, and he was like, just put this record out. This is a really cool thing. Like, let's put the record out. And then he started playing drums to play drums with me.
Really?
That was some years ago. And then, and then Chris ended up, she's from Boise, but we'd played in some bands before, and she came to Portland and was like, I'm going to Portland. I'm going to play in your band. Like, it'll be great. So that was sort of like mid Pastor's Wives, and the Pastor's Wives was sort of, this, so it was built on those songs and that freshness and that freedom that I felt. And then we just really blew that up. And,
and what was that? More of a folky tone to it?
It was like, it was, the songs were more straightforward songs, verse, chorus. But the playing could go very much outside. Like, it just really walked right on the edge of the cliff, like, all the time. It was very much like the show could derail and train wreck. And we all sang, and the harmonies, I feel like it was sort of the death rattle of me coming to understand what it was that the gospel music that I grew up with, like, what that does. So we really just dove in, with that, and the audiences dove in with us and went on some incredible rides and had a ball. It was really great.
Yeah.
But then I got to the point where I was like, I'm ready to cut loose certain aspects of my past and move into the future. And now, not just sort of, sort of ham-fistedly process where I came from, but now sort of like, now having to come to understand it, now use that freedom and use those powers that be and kind of bring it into something that's, that I think is truer. It's less cathartic on one level, but I think it's truer of my life, and it's
true. And that's where Modern Kin,
and that's where Modern Kin came out,
developed
out of
that.
Pastor's Wives.
Yeah. So do you care to talk about, like, cause I did read in an interview with you that was done, I don't know, maybe a year ago or something like that, that there was a car accident.
Right.
That kind of culminated
just
at
add
the
up
end.
The drama. Just keep it coming.
We are keeping this dark, man.
Yeah.
But it sounded like in the interview that you gave with the Willamette Weekly or something like that, that was kind of the culmination of the Pastor's Wives ending. Do you care to talk about that at all?
Well,
I don't want to depress you.
No. No, it's not depressing. It's not depressing. I mean, it would be depressing if it could be depressing, and it could have been debilitating. And
sure.
It has taken me a ton of time to recover. It took a long time.
Do you know what happened? Like, what
in
happened?
In the accident?
Yeah, yeah. How did it happen?
It was bad weather. I was driving home from work. Just had gotten off work, like, working with kids. I coach kids.
Yeah.
It's another story. Anyway, I just got off work, and the weather was bad. And I was just, there's a crazy sort of a strange on-ramp from my work where there's like a truck lane to the right, and then the on-ramp goes in the middle, and then the trucks go from their truck lane over to onto the freeway. And it was bad weather.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, we get freezing rain in Portland, and it's going over a hill, and it wasn't frozen, so I wasn't that concerned. But I don't remember exactly what happened. I just remember the back of the truck. I just have this still photo in my brain of the back of the truck, and then I woke up on the side of the road.
Wow.
So I know that it was one of those situations, and it's happened to me since then. Rather terrifyingly, the same scenario where, like, a truck it's up a hill, so they're going much slower.
Right, right.
And then it's just like, oh, the lane just ends, and they don't signal or anything, and they just are over, and they're just over, and they're in your lane. Yeah,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And it's right as you're accelerating to get in the freeway.
So you were thrown from the car?
Well, I was in the car.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember anything, and I woke up on the side of the road, and it was like, it was dark and no one was around, and I don't know how long. I think I was there for like 20 minutes or something like that before somebody stopped. you know, no one was out because like the weather was bad and whatever.
So the truck didn't even stop? Like the...
Yeah, I don't know the whole story. The cops said the truck stopped up around the bend, but like I feel like I got a little window into, you know, like, I don't know, the trekking world or something. Like, it's just like, you know, we got a job to do and like whatever. I don't know. They didn't stop. Yeah, they didn't stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Oh, wow. Wow.
But eventually, you know, a kind citizen stopped. He's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Nope." I was like, I woke up for a second and then I blacked out. And then next thing I knew, that all the emergency personnel were there.
It's the hospital
for 10 days or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, blah, 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 blah. I mean, people have like terrible things that happen, but for me, like, you know, it's like, I sort of have a thing now where I've just been exploring, like I read a quote, and there's a book called The Lovers that I just pulled off the shelf, at home, that was where there's a quote talking about immortality, and that like immortality is not the concept is sort of it's not that it you live forever, it's just like in those moments or in that time period, and we've all maybe had this time when we were young and with a sensation of immortality, and in that moment we're like sort of immortal,
right?
Like,
right.
And that sensation of being immortal is sort of the big deal, and then the loss of that is the thing that is this, you know, like a heavier sense of mortality. We sure. really are going dark now.
Yeah.
This is the dark part of the interview. But it was that for me, it was just like, you know, you can't go through something that's that serious and not really, as much as I thought I've always been asking the big questions, it definitely like brought a lot of that up for me. So,
well, it sounds like you've dissected it endlessly, right? Like, yeah. Like something like that, like you just said, like a big happening in your life like that. You do, the older you get, the more you can kind of dissect that stuff and try to find meaning in it, you know?
Yeah.
And have you found meaning in it?
I think it's
at all?
It's more like now what?
Sure.
It's not so much like
what's
the big universal truth?
I
definitely went through a phase like after I got out of the church where I was still evangelical, just not for, you know, Christianity. You know, I was still trying to find the truth and tell people about the truth. Where I feel like to me now, I understand like the idea of finding what you know gets you up in the morning, and like what is it that makes your life feel meaningful and feel fulfilling, and you know, in light of how quick our lives are, you know, spent here, it's like, what's gonna make this go off for me, you know?
Sure.
And that's related to where we started talking about music and, you know, like, what does success in music mean and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it's all kind of related and I'm still working it out.
I love it. Yeah. That's great, man. Well, Drew, thank you so much for coming, man, and having a very deep and serious conversation with me.
Yeah, man. Well, I didn't know I was going to get into it, and I hope for you guys who are listening out there, it's, you know, it's not like too serious or
personal, not at all, man.
I really like, for me, like this band is such an expression, and I think an interview like this or talking about this like makes sense to me in the context of Modern Kin, because this band and this music is as close to me as any music I've ever made. And,
sure.
And more intrinsic. So the story connects for me. I don't feel like for me to, you know, for us to talk about these things, I don't feel like I'm getting into my personal life, but my music is something else. In this case, the music is also,
it's intertwined,
personal. And so, so maybe this kind of colors, if you listen to the record, maybe you'll be able to hear some of these things in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you can, man. And, the record is fantastic.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan of it. Do you guys have new tunes coming out soon, or are you working on a new album?
Yeah, I've been working on new songs, and we'll play a couple of them. We've been playing a couple of them live on the tour, and then we're gonna get in the wintertime.
Excellent.
When it's a bad time to drive.
Hunker down.
Yeah.
Get into that studio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it.
I love it, man. I love it. Okay, you can find out more about Modern Kin and Drew at modern-kin.com. And you can also buy the album, the self-titled album, that came out last year, correct?
Yeah.
At their Bandcamp site, modernkin.bandcamp.com as well. And you guys are on Twitter, Instagram, stuff like that, Facebook.
Yeah, if you just Google us, it'll all be there.
Yeah, go and find out about it. And hopefully after the winter, you guys will be playing some shows again. Huh?
Yep.
All right, man.
We're back around.
Okay. We're going to go out today with the song Unannounced by Modern Kin. Once again, thank you, Drew.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun talking with you. And you can find out more about us by going to our website at air-raid.net, clicking on the Archives tab, and listening to all 223 episodes of this here show with people like Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie. What about Presidents of the United States of America? How about Eddie Pepitone? What about Pete Holmes? What about Mike Birbiglia? All there for your listening pleasure, all for free. Yeah, that's right. Free. Free. So go and do that. Okay, this is Unannounced by Modern Kin, and we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody.
Said, give it up, baby.